Hi, Dr. Lehman. Thanks for coming to Focus on the Family. I have a 12-and-a-half-year-old who is unable to stay focused. Every time I ask her to do something, she either leaves the room or goes off to do something else. What should I do with her?
I would UPS her to a far-off land. we're on, aren't we?
Yeah, we are on, and that's Dr. Kevin Lehman.
This is
Focus on the Family, and Jim, I appreciate the directness of the answer from you.
We asked for a short answer. That's pretty short. UPS, that's good.
Well, this is Focus on the Family with Focus President and author Jim Daly. I'm John Fuller, and Jim, really, we're here to solve parenting problems. Every child is different, and every answer from our guest is probably going to be different as well.
Well, it's so true. It's always a pleasure and a joy to have Dr. Kevin Lehman with us. Hey, today we want to talk about that powerful child. Dr. Kevin Lehman has a new book, Parenting Your Powerful Child. And I like the concept because most of us are blessed with maybe one or more powerful children in our families. Power comes in different packages, Dr. Lehman says. That loud, strong-willed one, the quiet, passive-aggressive one, or perhaps even the procrastinating one. And he illuminates that it's genes and environment and birth order, which, of course, he authored the Birth Order book, that can influence these things. But today and next time, we're going to talk about not only the problems, but the solutions.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Dr. Kevin Lehman, welcome back to Focus on the Family. And you're not talking just about strong-willed children here. You're talking about something far broader in the powerful child. What is it?
Absolutely. And thank you, Jim. And thank you, John, for having me once again. You know, I think we've given the strong-willed child a bad rap. Let's start with that. I think you want your kids to be strong-willed. You want your kid to stand up in this world that says, hey, do everything we do and be cool like us. You want that son, you want that daughter to be a daughter, a son of conviction, to know right from wrong, you know, to do the right thing. But the powerful child has an agenda. The powerful child wants to win, control, dominate. If you're a mommy today and you're raising a son, let me be clear on this. If you have a powerful child, he's going to be a lousy husband because he's going to be a controller. I've never heard a woman say, Dr. Lehman, I just love the way my husband controls me.
Mm-hmm.
So the stakes are high. And here's the kicker. We as parents teach the kids how to be powerful. If you have a powerful child, I got news for you. There's a powerful parent somewhere nearby.
And you say about 99% of the children are powerful. Along with that, you may have heard some of the giggles in the background. We have about 25 women here to guide our discussion. We're going to ask you all some questions. So let me say to you, welcome to the studios at Focus on the Family.
Thank you.
So we're really going to be tested here, Kevin.
Well, you know, women are they're the heartbeat of the family. There's no two ways about it. And, you know, in so many cases, in most cases in families, the kids are much more familiar with mama. So they know how to punch up mommy's buttons. They know how to pull her chain, get her going. And it's amazing how a husband can say something once and a mom finds herself saying it several times.
Well, that's a good place to start. Why is that happening?
Mm. Well, because, again, I think we've trained kids how to be powerful. And by 18 months, now, this is pretty young. By 18 months, a kid has full understanding of great power that they have over the parent.
That's hard to believe, though. 18 months?
Let's take a picture of a little guy, 17 months of age. Dad's trying to get him into a high chair to have his dinner. Now, this is a kid who has no intention of going in that high chair. And if there was a sport in the Olympics called arching your back, this kid could win Olympic gold because a 17-month-old kid does not want to go in that chair can contort their body in such a way they look like a pretzel, okay? And there's dad battling, trying to get this kid in, and mommy, just trying to be good mom, says, honey, Roger, just give him to me. I'll take him, honey. And she takes little Fletcher and puts little Fletcher on her lap and proceeds to feed little Fletcher spoon by spoon. Now, everybody in the room, be little Fletcher for just a second. Would you rather sit on mommy's warm lap and be spoon-fed or sit in the cheap plastic chair they bought at Walmart? So, in other words, we have reinforced the kid fussing the same way we do in the mall when a kid throws a temper tantrum because he wants a candy treat, and we say, no, we're not going to get a candy treat, and that's it. That's final. Okay? There's a big stir. People are watching. Okay? And you feel pressure as a parent. All right! But then there's no more candy for life. Do you understand me? No more candy for life. So not only do we cave into the kid, but we say stupid things to him.
Oh, man, you're hitting me right between the eyes.
Guilty. What, the high chair or the candy?
Well,
or both.
All of it. Yeah. Yeah. But it is true. Now, why is parenting any different today than it was many years ago? Are we busier today, so we're giving in, or are we just weaker?
Well, I think there's parents tonight who are lying awake looking at the crack in the ceiling, feeling like General Custer on his last day on this earth. If you've ever played whack-a-mole in amusement park, being a young parent today with multiple children is like playing whack-a-mole. Whack, 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 and as soon as you whack one, the other one pops up. So it's tremendously different because the culture we live in has such great influence over our kids. Take something as innocent as playing soccer. And you find out that your little son, little Buford, has just been selected for citywide soccer. Ooh. And this means now that the next 10 weekends of your life are going to be traveling to another city over the weekend, okay? So all focus is on soccer. And where's the room for Almighty God in that kid's life? Where's the room for anything that's worthy on that Sunday in terms of attending church? And so I say culture dominates an awful lot of what we have to face as parents, plus the cell phones, the Instagram, everything. It's just changed so rapidly.
Now, you've talked about children being those manipulators. Let's apply that spiritual component to it. Why? Why are we all sinners that give birth to sinners, and why are these little rascals so good? At 18 months, they can manipulate us the way you described.
Well, the firstborn, let's start with that, is the lab rat of the family. You know, we're new at being parents, and we're surrounded by women here in the Focus on the Family studio, and if you've given birth, that's not a piece of cake to begin with. But that 19-and-a-half-incher is laid across your lap, and the lactation nurse was supposed to visit you. You never saw the woman. Your insurance company throws you out the door within about 48 hours, and all of a sudden you're awestruck that you have this tremendous responsibility with this little child whose little lip was quivering, and you instantly fell in love with this little girl or this little guy, and you go home, and you're trying to be the best mom you can possibly be. And this is where it starts, because I think a lot of parents who have very powerful children have just erred in trying to do way too much for their children, trying to make sure they're happy, happy, happy at every turn. In my book, Have a New Kid by Friday, the best line in that book is, an unhappy child is a healthy child. Yeah. And there's times your son or daughter has to be miserable, quite frankly, and unhappy. Why? Because they disobeyed you, they talk back to you. So part of the problem, Jim, is that we start off practicing on these little lab rats. We have high expectations. The kids knew it being a kid. You knew it being a parent. And that's a perfect storm for a lot of excitement down the road.
Well, and in your book, Parenting Your Powerful Child, you describe it this way, which I think is funny. One of the personality types, aggressive, temperamental, curveball manipulator. That's pretty good.
Yeah, and some of these manipulators, the curveball guy in particular is the one that, you know, here's a kid that's pretty obedient, seems to just sort of, you know, go with the flow, and all of a sudden they hit age 10, age 11, age 12, the hormone group, the pubescent, and all of a sudden the grades drop off the shelf, the kid has an instant attitude, and you say, where'd this kid come from? And that's why I call him the curveball. But then you've got the eggshell, the sensitive one. Oh, Dr. Lehman, Aunt Melanie is a very sensitive daughter, very sensitive girl. When I hear that, I reach for my wallet. I'm protecting my wallet because I don't trust this kid. And when you talk to somebody and you hear that this kid is sensitive, be careful, because you have a powerful little buzzard on your hands, a kid who can use the sensitivity and the tears to work you.
Well, you're talking about real manipulation, though. How does a parent... And at what age do you engage to show that child that manipulating me that way is not going to work?
Let me ask you a question first. How do you feel when Gene cries?
Oh, tender. What can I do for you?
Yeah.
What do I need to do to fix it?
Do you think that women can use tears to bring man to their knees? And then
well, ladies, what do you think?
Yeah. Yeah. And so I think we all had to pony up and understand that, you know, manipulation is very, very possible, especially for youngest children in the family. Your oldest children tend to be more rule-oriented, and more precise and perfectionistic. It's us babies, you know, who could sell dead rats for a living if we had to. And they earn a living looking up, because your youngest child looks up and sees the middle child or sees the next child in line, and they go out of their way to be different. So that's why I say most families have more than one powerful child in the family.
How does that parent, though, how does that parent resist that urge to fight? You talked about the supermarket experience.
Yeah.
I remember I was out of town. Gene was at a local store that sells very inexpensive high chairs.
Yeah.
And she's in line, and I think it was Trent who saw a candy bar he wanted, and he just had a meltdown. And it was a uniformed military person that walked over and tried to sort him out, to say, listen to your mother, son. And Gene was actually very thankful for that. Yeah. I was mortified when I got home. It was kind of our first big, oh my goodness, what kind of child do we have?
Well, here's what we have to understand about powerful people. They bait us. And fighting is an act of cooperation. Ladies, when you fight with your husband, you know exactly what to say to escalate the battle. Mentioning your mother-in-law coming for the entire summer might just get you to the next level. And so kids know the same thing. And kids many times will throw out a bone, so to speak, to see if we'll bite. And when we do, okay, game is on. We are going to clash. And here's the other thing. The kid that's most like you, Mom, the kid that's most like you, Dad, is the one you're probably going to clash with. It's the similarities, and that's where birth order fits in this paradigm, that mommies tend to hit it off better with sons, daddies with daughters. There's key relationship in families. So again, it's the opposites that attract psychologically. So keep in mind that kids will bait you, and they'll sucker you. And so one of the things that I like to teach parents is that when a kid says something really stupid and ridiculous, which is every day, you can take a look at that kid and say, wow, interesting. Don't go there. Don't try to over-control. Now, again, we have authoritarian parents, which most of us in this room grew up with. All right, listen up. You are going to do what I tell you to do as long as you live under this roof. Do you understand me? Hey, don't make me come over there. Hey, you want something to cry about? I'll give you something to cry about. Now, you know, the laughter behind says, hey, I can identify with that. And see, this is what people need to understand. That isn't godly. That doesn't reflect God's teaching. Mm. But neither does the permissive, you know.
But give us an example of that. What does that sound like,
the permissive? Oh, the permissive is, I'm Brittany, sweetheart. It's 8 p.m. Have you chosen to go to bed yet? Or how about, hey, would you turn that music down? I'm trying to finish your science project. So we have parents, and here's the kicker. If you bring up your kid in an authoritarian manner, they're going to rebel. They're going to be powerful, rebellious kids. If you're permissive with them, and here's the kicker, they're going to rebel if they're permissive. So the only way that really reflects God's teaching is to move toward the authoritative parent style.
Authoritative, and not
authoritarian. So you're in healthy authority over your kid. You don't let your son or your daughter run over you at any time, Mom, okay? You establish healthy authority, and I think that's what St. Paul was trying to tell us in Ephesians 6, when he says, children, obey your parents. It's the right thing to do, because God has placed them in what? In authority over you. So are we talking about being mamby-pamby? No. Either is God's word, because it says, every knee shall what? Shall bow. Mm-hmm. That's the goal.
Well, we're right in the middle of a very interesting conversation with Dr. Kevin Lehman on today's Focus on the Family with Jim Daly. I'm John Fuller, and Jim, you and I have children that fit the categories that Dr. Lehman has identified.
Speak
to
for yourself, point. John.
we did
yes,
some chatting
we do.
Off air.
We do.
And I've appreciated the overview of some of the parenting styles, because I've been guilty of, you know, finger in face saying, you got to do what I say.
So we all have.
There's something for every parent here, and some ways to deal with pretty much every child, because your premise, Dr. Lehman, is that every child is powerful. You may not see it on the surface, but they're all trying to manipulate.
Every kid starts off an attention getter. You have to understand that all kids want attention. The question is, does the child get attention positively or negatively? Once they get negative attention, then they'll escalate to be a powerful child. So the powerful child, again, says, I only count life when I win, control when I dominate. The attention getter says, I only count in life when I'm noticed. So your own feelings, this is unique about this book. Your own feelings as a mom or a dad can tell you if you have a powerful child or not. Do you feel annoyed by the behavior? If you do, you have an attention getter. But if you feel like you'd like to take that little nose and rub it in it, so to speak, and you can't do that to me, do you know who I am? I am your mother. I am your dad. You got a powerful child on your hands. That's the problem.
Well, and you've talked about that. You've talked about the aggressive temperament. You've talked about that sensitive eggshell temperament, that stubborn procrastinator manipulator. You're touching on that. But I think our boys are more in that category.
Probably the tougher.
Yeah.
There's kids, Jim, you could beat them with a stick.
Well, does this come down to, you know, it's we asked you to clean your room at 9 o'clock and it's now 2 p.m. Did you get it done? I forgot.
But here's what we do. Most of us ask kids questions. Now, if you want something controversial, Lehman says on Parenting Your Powerful Child, don't ask your kids questions. Now, again,
make statements.
We're surrounded by women. I'm surprised we haven't been attacked to this moment because that's like asking a fire not to burn because women love to ask questions. Oh, Dr. Lehman, I've heard you on Focus on the Family over the years, and I've read a few of your books, and I really appreciate your wisdom. But when you say, don't ask questions, I respectfully disagree with you because, like, when Melissa comes home from school, I always ask her, honey, how was your day?
Well, that's a good question.
Interest. Okay, yeah, but what does the kid say? Fine. What'd you do in school today?
Nothing.
Teenager, where you been? Out. What'd you do? Nothing. You want to ask questions? Go ahead. Here's the kicker. Tell me more about that. It's a new way of talking to your kid. And a kid says something interesting. You say, well, honey, tell me more about that. Now, I think it's ironic because tell me more about that is a command in the English language. So the question thing needs to be tucked away. And you'll be surprised if you just back off a little bit. Kids want to be affirmed by you. They want you to enjoy them, and they want you to be happy. So an obvious conclusion is sometimes you look at a kid and say, I am very unhappy with what just went down here. Give them the look, turn your back, and walk away. You're raking coals over the kids when you do that.
Okay, now, but I'm going to bring you back to the procrastinator.
Yes.
So let's say that you don't ask a question, but right. You've asked them to get, you know, make sure you get your homework done.
Okay,
not a question.
Yeah. We spend our time trying to micromanage kids. Mm-hmm. Kids need to know that they have homework to do, et cetera. But here's the kid who's 9 years old who's supposed to clean his room on Tuesday and Saturday. It's not done. No reminders in this system. None. It's not done on Tuesday, and 9-year-old has neglected to do what she's supposed to do, and you, as money manager of the home, you go and you hire 7-year-old to go in and clean 9-year-old's room. You pay for it without fanfare out of 9-year-old's allowance.
So don't put it in their face. You just do it.
Right.
Yeah.
But when they find out they lost money to their sister or brother, who they really don't care for that much to begin with, you've made some inroads. The 17-year-old who's supposed to clean the garage, who was supposed to do it last spring, and now the snow is about to fly, he's looking for the car keys at 6 o'clock that night. He was supposed to clean the garage. He doesn't do a lick, and now he's got a date. He's got plans. Dad, where's my keys? Honey, you're not going to find the keys. They're right here in my pocket. Well, give them to me. I'm late. Honey, you're supposed to clean the garage today. I see you didn't do a lick. He'll promise you anything at that point.
Mm-hmm.
He'll promise you he'll repair the roof. He'll paint the garage. He'll pull weeds for life. Just give me the keys of that car. And that's what I call sticking to your guns without shooting yourself in the foot. And that's how you establish authority. That God didn't put us on this earth to be run over by you, 17-year-old. So don't be afraid to pull a rug out.
Now, the one issue there, so many parents, that's hard to do. Why is that hard to stick to your guns? What are we doing as parents to manipulate our environment? Mm.
Well, as I look at kids today, kids shorter than a yardstick are in full control of adults. And they whine. Whining doesn't continue unless it's paid off. Maladaptive behavior doesn't continue unless it's paid off. We remind and coax. Many listeners are the human alarm clocks for their kids to try to get them out the door in the morning. If you had Kevin Lehman with you for a day, I'll tell you what would happen. That you wouldn't wake the kid up. You say, Lehman, wait a minute, don't wake him up. He'd be late for school. Oh, how soon you catch on. But, he's not going to be happy. But you tell him, hey, I'm not playing this game any longer. I'm done. Mm-hmm. How do you feel after you scream and yell at your kid all morning to get him out the door? So why not do some rug pulling, write a note to teacher or principal that says, Anthony has absolutely no reason to be late today to school. He chose to sleep in. Feel free to do whatever you do to kids who are illegally tardy. Love, Mom. And put the tennis ball life on his side of the court.
It seems awfully abrupt if we have, say, a teenager who's been procrastinating
right.
for their entire life. We've trained
right.
them to do this.
Right.
Should there be a re-entry? I have a friend whose child doesn't clean their room. And time and again, they're told, clean your room. So here's a 12-year-old who doesn't clean the room.
Well, okay.
Shouldn't we be gentle here?
Well, you could clean it for him like it's never been cleaned before, just like the kid who refuses to brush his teeth at age 4. I could brush his teeth like they'd never been brushed before. That might get his attention. So, yeah, it is abrupt. And when you have a kid who's had 14 years of procrastination, please don't think that reading Parenting Your Powerful Child and listening to Kevin Lehman is going to instantly change this kid who's procrastinated for 14 years. Mm-hmm. But what's going to happen is you're going to take the joy out of procrastinating in his life. Mm-hmm. And that's what you need to focus on. And those behaviors can turn, okay? I wrote all those books on Have a New Kid by Friday and Have a New Teenager by... I always told people they're scams because it doesn't take 5 days. You can do it by Wednesday, 2 days. And most behaviors you can turn around. But when you have these kids who are just driven toward defeating themselves, and that's what these procrastinators do, and a lot of them don't measure up because they feel if they measure up, you're always going to make them measure up, and there's the pressure. So these are your slobs. These are your kids who live in piles. And you adults, you know who I'm talking about. In your desk, you have piles all over your desk. Someone asks you to find something, you know exactly which pile to look in with equal ease. Well, why is that? Because you grew up with a critical-eyed parent, a parent who could spot a flaw at 50 paces. So do you want to be a flaw-picking mom or dad? No. You want to be an encourager. Give that kid vitamin E and stand with your kid.
Mm. Kevin, this is great, great stuff. When you look at a parent that feels like you're giving up the right to be right, how do you calm yourself down in that moment? Because I know even in our household, when we have some conflict with the boys over something, so often Jean, she will get to that point where, man, she's so frustrated. You moms like that?
Mm-hmm.
You get to that point and you're just so frustrated.
We cave. We give in. But I think sometimes you say to a kid, you know, you could be right. Because they'll throw stupid things out to you. Okay? And a kid who, you know, you remind every day, the bus is going to be here in 19 minutes, you know, and you do that whole dog and pony show, you might walk in very glibly some morning and say, honey, I don't know if you're a nurse or not, but it's 8:20. Turn around, walk away. You call him for breakfast, and he comes out 20 minutes later, okay? And he says, these pancakes are cold. Really? Mine were warm and tasty. Do you see what I'm saying? You can learn to talk to kids differently. And I think that's the encouraging thing. And again, for those of you who don't know, I graduated fourth and bottom of my class in high school, was going nowhere fast. I was thrown out of Cub Scouts, so you can imagine what kind of kid I was.
Thrown out of Cub Scouts.
Yeah, that's bad. Thrown out of fourth grade. I did a lot of things. But I had a mom who loved me anyway. And isn't that true of Almighty God? Doesn't he love us anyway? I said in a book that sold well over 1 million copies years ago, Making Children Mind Without Losing Yours, I said, we have seen the enemy, and they are small. And today they're unionized. And you better have a game plan. And all I'm trying to do is teach parents to have a game plan, because kids, by their nature, are hedonistic little suckers. They do not come in this world with concern for other people. But that's our job, is to train them up, not train them down, and most of us train kids down. Train them up in such a way that they feel encouraged and loved no matter what.
What a great place for us to pause in this conversation with Dr. Kevin Lehman about powerful children, unionized little children. And there is more to come next time. On behalf of Jim Daly and the entire team, thanks for listening to Focus on the Family. I'm John Fuller.
I think Dr. Kevin Lehman is absolutely right when he says that our kids seem to know exactly how to push our buttons and that they can be incredibly powerful. But that shouldn't scare us, because he also reminds us that it's actually a good thing to have a powerful child, as long as we know how to parent effectively. The book we're recommending today is Dr. Kevin Lehman's Have a New Kid by Friday, How to Change Your Child's Attitude, Behavior, and Character in 5 Days. Dr. Lehman offers real hope and practical, doable strategies for regaining control and becoming the parent you've always wanted to be. You can find the book online at safamily.co.za or request it when you call us on 031-716-3300. And if you haven't already done so, I encourage you to take our free online parenting assessment. It outlines the 7 traits of effective parenting and gives you a helpful snapshot of your strengths and maybe some areas where you can grow. Just go to safamily.co.za and click on the link. We'll be hearing more from Dr. Lehman on tomorrow's program, so I hope you'll tune in for that. For Focus on the Family Africa, I'm Graham Schnell, inviting you back then, and we'll once again help you and your family thrive in Christ.